It's easy to think about religion as always having been about a male God. When we see the work of the Judeo-Christian tradition, when we see Christianity and Islam, when we see Judaism, they all focus on the same Abrahamic God, Jehovah, a thunder God. So when Merlin Stone wrote the book When God Was a Woman back in 1976, it was absolutely revolutionary. In 1976, people were not ready to talk about when God was a woman. She looked at the worship of the feminine divine from the beginning, all the way back to the Stone Age, the Paleolithic and Neolithic ages. She writes that back in the Near and Middle East, we can find evidence that the development of the religion of the female deity was intertwined with the earliest beginnings of religion on earth. Religion began with a woman. It began with a supreme goddess. In Stone's words, with a creator and lawmaker, prophetess, provider of human destiny, inventor, healer, hunter, valiant leader in battle, religion began with a woman. Christobal Hastings writes, it's worth noting that many anthropologists believe these upper Paleolithic societies, they likely followed a matrilineal structure, meaning women had supreme status at the center of the household. Stone always thought that these communities engaged in ancestor worship. So the concept of the creator of life may have been formed by the clan's image of the women who were their own ancestors. There are figures of pregnant women across Europe and the Middle East and India, and some go back to 25,000 BC. It wasn't some sun god like Ra who came first. It wasn't a thunder god like Jehovah or Zeus. Religion didn't begin with our attempts to understand why the sun rose, or why the thunder happened, or why the rain came down. Religion began with honoring our ability to make new humans. We started religion as a way to look at who we were and where we came from and how we got here. The pre-agriculture societies worshipped powerful female gods. But then, as you heard in our story this morning, farming came along and agriculture. And with the rise of agriculture, we went from worshipping merely the pregnant female, the wider idea, to named goddesses. Because before that point, when you see the figures that we're talking about, they're a belly and breasts. They may or may not have a head. They may or may not have arms and legs. The most famous is one called the Venus of Willendorf, which a lot of you may have seen somewhere. It looks like almost a round bubble of pregnant stomach with breasts on top, and that's it. Very short legs, very stumpy arms, very undefined head. Other ones are found in Europe, like the Scylla and the Gig, which almost looks like a set of female genitals with legs. They were all focused purely on fertility. But as we got into an agricultural society, it shifted. And all of a sudden, the female god got a name. They got personalities. We are talking about 2.58 million years ago. Humans had just discovered how to make tools, and they were making religious statues. Goddess figures carved in the period have shown up in Palestine and Israel and Turkey and Egypt. And all these goddesses were variations on a theme. Lynn Rogers writes, the deification of the goddess in the ancient world was a variation on a theme. the female creator in Sumner and Egypt and Crete and Greece and Ethiopia, Libya, India, Elam, Babylonia, Cain and Anatolia, Ireland, Mesopotamia, even ancient Judah and Israel. She was immortal, changeless, and omnipotent. And Hastings writes, in her book, Mother God, Sylvia Brown offers a detailed history of the female principle that flourished. The Inuit people had Sedana, the goddess of the sea, the mother of the ocean. The Assyrians and the Babylonians worshipped Ishtar, the goddess of love and war. Boy, that's an interesting combo, isn't it? In Aztec culture, Teoanan was considered the mother of the gods. For the ancient Egyptians, it was Isis, the goddess of children and magic. In ancient Sumer, the primary goddess was Inanna, the goddess of love and war. Meanwhile, the ancient Phoenicians had two, Anat, the fertility goddess, and Astarte, the mother goddess. Warriors, counselors, creators of the universe, bearers of children. These goddesses were anything but an afterthought. But the problems that happen whenever women rise in power happened. Misogyny began to occur, and by 1500 BC, goddess worship was in a state of disarray. Now, I've looked through book after book. Scholars have studied this. No one can really tell us why. The best guess anyone has is that invading Indo-Europeans brought in dominant masculine religion and patrilineal custom. And 25,000 years of goddess worship was wiped out. Creation myths were actually rewritten. Symbols of goddess worship were denigrated. You may see this yourself when you look at pictures that come from early Christianity as they attempted to pull in goddess worshipers. If you ever want an interesting afternoon, look up paintings of the Virgin Mary and begin to look at the imagery you see, because most of it has been pulled directly from Inanna and Ishtar. Look for the crown of stars. Look for paintings depicting the Virgin Mary standing on the crescent moon, holding her hands out in this position, standing on the crescent moon with the crown of stars, with rose petals falling. All these images come from goddesses that were thousands and thousands of years older. And in an effort to salvage goddess worship, these were wrapped in as Christianity rose to help the worshipers who were originally goddess worshipers understand this new religion. Not all the religions that followed this period wiped out the goddess. Savardi Bess points out the Hindus have never stopped worshiping the mother goddess. The mother, who has been obscured in the shadow of Western religions for years, is considered to be the sum total of the energy in the universe. From Durga, the fearless goddess who vanquished her foes atop a tiger, to Sarasvati, the four-armed guardian deity of knowledge. The vast spectrum of venerated Hindu goddesses highlight the power of the feminine principle, none more so than Shakti, the divine force called the Great Mother. So Hinduism kept this idea. Buddhism, too, celebrates the feminine principle by way of the Bodhisattva Guan Yin, whose name means the one who sees and hears the cries of the world. So it's still there in places. But as the majority world religions kept changing and evolving, the supreme female deity faded. And today, instead of a history of old female religions, what we get is the story of Adam and Eve and a snake, and it's all her fault. The Old Testament avoids the subject. In the Bible, the goddess, the Christian Bible, the goddess is referred to as Elohim in the masculine gender. In ancient Jewish writings, you do have Shekinah, which is a feminine principle. It's still there. In modern Hasidic Jewish writing, in spiritualist Jewish writings, it's still present, but not in mainstream Reform as much. So for the first 200,000 years of human life on earth, God was a woman. Merlin Stone says, we need to cultivate a contemporary consciousness of the once widespread veneration of the female deity as the wise creatress of the universe and all life and civilization. I say we need to think about what that would look like and how that would align with our values as a leading myth. Whether or not there is a God, does it matter if God is a woman? Does it matter which set of metaphors we use, which set of traits? The female deities they're talking about here were not just pacifists. They were also fierce warriors. So what does it mean as you use if we consider God as a woman? And that's something to think about. Amen.